This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave in for Terry Gross. What with Enron, WorldCom, and the impending baseball strike, these days the papers are full of the word greed. But our linguist Jeff Nunberg has noticed that greed's a word we only see in the papers. We don't use it much in our daily lives. He has these thoughts about the most newsworthy of the seven deadly sins.
The other day, I looked at a database of major newspapers to see how often the words greed or greedy occurred near the words corporate, CEO, or executive. Not surprisingly, the total's way up for 2002, more than seven times as great as for the same period last year. And the figure would have been still higher if I'd thrown in the phrases baseball players and team owners. What's more interesting, the word greed by itself is a lot more frequent in all contexts this year than last. It's up almost 50% since January. It's odd for a common word like that to change its frequency so rapidly, particularly when it's the name of a basic human frailty. After all, whatever people may like to think, it isn't as if the amount of greed in the world fluctuates the way the number of school shootings or bankruptcies does. But the media give a lot more attention to greed at some times than others, and particularly when the economy is tanking. When you chart the frequencies of greed and greedy in the press, they turn out to be an almost perfect trailing indicator for the stock market. The worse the Dow is doing, the more the media start talking about greediness. The words declined steadily between 1994 and 2000, then they shot up again until they returned to a near-record level this summer, when all the market indices were at five-year lows. In the press, the summers of greed seem always to follow the winters of our discontent. It's remarkable that the press talks about greed as much as they do. In newspapers, the word is 50% more common than the word envy. That's very different from what you'd find if you followed ordinary people around with a tape recorder. Greed seems to be a purely public dereliction. It isn't something we talk about much in daily life. In my household, we sometimes throw the adjective greedy around, but only in a jocular way and more often in reference to pizza than to money. Don't get greedy, you already had two slices. But getting greedy is just a momentary lapse, not a moral condition. And the word greed isn't what comes to mind when I think about people I know who take an immoderate interest in accumulating money and material things. I might question their values, but I don't think of it as a sin. It's more on the line of a having disorder. Maybe this is just a matter of perspective. However you define it, greed always comes down to wanting more than your fair share. And at the scale of everyday life, it's easier to see what counts as more than a fair share of a pizza than more than a fair share of money. In fact, I'll bet most people would have a hard time thinking of themselves as greedy under any circumstances, given that the notion of a fair share is wonderfully elastic. I'm confident that if somebody offered me an eight-figure compensation package, I'd find a way to convince myself that I deserved every penny. If it didn't have a public career to sustain it, greed would probably sound as quaint and biblical as words like sloth and wrath and gluttony do. But the fact that we don't think about greed in everyday settings is exactly what makes it a useful notion to keep around in public life. It's so remote that we can all denounce it with a clear conscience. People tend to talk about greed as a collective pathology rather than as an individual vice. In the press, I'm always running into references to corporate greed and investor greed, greedy developers, and greedy oil companies. But writers rarely use greed and greedy to describe particular people, apart from rapacious movie villains and a couple of poster child miscreants who have actually been caught dead to rights. And even then, there's a striking discrepancy. Enron is 25 times more likely to be described as greedy than Kenneth Lay is. The curious thing about all this isn't that it makes greed easy to condemn, but that it also makes it easy to defend. That's what explains the success of the slogan, "Greed is good." That phrase was originally supposed to evoke the audience's repugnance when Michael Douglas uttered it in the movie Wall Street. But the champions of the market system have adopted it as a defiant way of praising untrammeled acquisitiveness as the source of economic growth and all the good things it brings with it. You can still find people saying this even after the revelations of the last year or so, though a certain defensiveness has crept into their tone. There's nothing new about this notion. 200 years ago, David Hume called avarice the spur of industry. It's hard to imagine anybody making a catchphrase like that out of most of the other deadly sins. Gluttony is groovy. Sloth is splendid. But then greed is a more conveniently removed vice than the others. You can praise it in the abstract without expecting that anybody's actually going to own up to it. Jack Welch isn't about to claim in his autobiography that he owes his success to his overweening greed. For that matter, the guy in the TV repair shop doesn't crow about the social benefits of greed when he's explaining why he's charging you $75 to make an estimate. However people try to redeem it, there's no sin that's privately more shameful and unlovable than greed is. It's what the poet Matthew Green called the sphincter of the heart.
Jeff Nunberg is a researcher at Stanford's Center for the Study of Language and Information and the author of the book, The Way We Talk Now. This is Fresh Air.